Side 12.
She was at the top of the stairs, kneeling and peeping through the banisters like a child. She was dressed like a child in tight little leotards, with her hair drawn back and tied with ribbon. She looked at him with the droll, mischievous expression of a child. Barbara de Courtney.
"Hello,"
she said. Reich began to shake.
"I'm Baba,"
she said. Reich motioned to her faintly. She arose at once and came down the stairs, holding on to the banister carefully.
"I'm not supposed to," she said. "Are you Papa's friend?"
Reich took a deep breath.
He croaked.
"Papa had to go away," she prattled. "But he's coming back right away. He told me if I'm a good girl, he'll bring me a present. I'm trying, but it's awful hard. Are you good?"
"Your father coming back? Your father?"
She nodded.
"Was you playing games with Aunt Mary? You kissed her. I saw it. Papa kisses me. I like it. Does Aunt Mary like it?"
She took his hand confidently.
"When I grow up, I'm going to marry Papa and be his girl forever. Do you have a girl?"
Reich pulled Barbara around and stared into her face.
"Are you rocketing?" he said hoarsely. "Do you think I'll fall into that orbit? How much did you tell Powell?"
"That's my Papa," she said. "When I ask him why his name is different from my name, he looks funny. What's your name?"
"I asked you,"
Reich shouted.
"How much did you tell him? Who do you think you're fooling with that act? Answer me."
She looked at him doubtfully, then began to cry, trying to pull away from him. He held on to her.
"Go away," she sobbed. "Let me go."
"Will you answer me?"
"Let me go."
He dragged her from the foot of the stairs to the lounger, where Mary Noyes still sat paralyzed. He threw the girl alongside her and stepped back again with the scrambler raised. Suddenly the girl whipped upright in the chair in a listening attitude. Her face lost its childishness and became drawn and taut. She thrust out her legs, leaped from the lounge, ran, stopped abruptly, then appeared to open a door. She ran forward, yellow hair flying, dark eyes wide with alarm, a lightning flash of wild beauty.
"Father!" she screamed. "For God's sake! Father!"
Reich's heart constricted. The girl ran towards him. He stepped forward to catch her. She stopped short, backed away, then darted to the left and ran in a half circle, screaming wildly, her eyes fixed.
"No," she cried. "No, for the love of Christ! Father!"
Reich pivoted and clutched at the girl. This time he caught her, while she fought and screamed. Reich was shouting too. The girl suddenly stiffened and clutched her ears. Reich was back in the orchid suite. He heard the explosion and saw the blood and brains gout out of the back of de Courtney's head. He shook with galvanic spasms that forced him to release the girl. She fell forward to her knees and crawled across the floor. He saw her crouch over the waxen body. Reich gasped for breath and beat his knuckles together painfully, fighting for control. When the roaring in his ears subsided, he propelled himself towards Barbara, trying to arrange his thoughts and make split-second alterations in his plans. He had never counted on a witness. God damn Powell. He would have to kill the girl. Would he arrange a double murder in the... No, not murder. Booby trap. Damn Gus Tate. Wait.
He wasn't in the Beaumont house. He was in...
33 Hudson Ramp, Powell said from the front door. Reich jerked around, crouched automatically and whipped the scrambler up under his left elbow, as Quizzard's killers had taught him. Powell sidestepped.
"Don't try it," he said sharply. "You son of a bitch!"
Reich shouted. He wheeled on Powell, who had already crossed him up again, stepped out of line of fire.
"You goddamn peeper, you lousy, sleazy son of a..."
Pal faked to the left, reversed, closed with Reich, and delivered a 6-inch jab to the ulnar nerve system. The scrambler fell to the floor. Reich clinched, punching, clawing, butting, swearing hysterically. Pal hit him with 3 lightning blows, nape, navel, and groin. The effect was that of a full spinal block. Reich crashed to the floor, retching, blood streaming from his nose.
"Brother, you think only you know how to gut fight?" Pal grunted.
He went to Barbara de Courtney, who still knelt on the floor, and raised her.
"You all right, Barbara?" he said.
"Hello, Papa. I had a bad dream."
"I know, baby. I had to give it to you. It was an experiment on that big oaf."
"Give me a kiss."
He kissed her forehead.
"You're growing up fast," he smiled. "You were just baby talking yesterday."
"I'm growing up because you promised to wait for me."
"It's a promise, Barbara. Can you go upstairs by yourself? Or do you have to be carried, like yesterday?"
"I can go all by my own self."
"All right, baby. Go up to your room."
She went to the stairs, took a firm hold on the banister, and climbed up. Just before she reached the top, she darted a glance at Reich and stuck her tongue out. Then she disappeared. Pal crossed to Mary Noyes, removed the gag, checked her pulse, then made her comfortable on the lounger.
"First notch, eh?" he murmured to Reich. "Painful, but she'll recover in an hour."
He went back to Reich and stared down at him, anger darkening his drawn face.
"I ought to pay you back for Mary, but what's the use? It wouldn't teach you anything. You poor bastard. You're just no damn good." "Kill me," Reich groaned. "Kill me, or let me up. By Christ, I'll kill you."
Pal picked up the scrambler and cocked an eye at Reich.
"Try flexing your muscles a little. Those blocks shouldn't last more than a few seconds."
He sat down with the scrambler in his lap.
"You had a tough break. I wasn't out of the house 5 minutes when I realized Tuca's story was a phony. You put her up to it, of course." "You're the phony," Reich shouted. "You and your ethics and your high talk. You and your phony goddamn..."
"She said the gun killed de Courtney," Pal continued imperturbably.
"It did, but no one knows what killed de Courtney except you and me. I turned around and came back. It was a long take, almost too long. Try getting up now. You can't be that sick."
Reich struggled up, his breath hissing horribly. Suddenly he dipped into his pocket and brought out the cartridge of detonation bulbs. Pal arched back in the chair and kicked Reich in the chest with his heel. The cartridge went flying. Reich fell back and collapsed on a sofa.
"When will you people learn you can't surprise a peeper?" Pal said.
He went to the cartridge and picked it up.
"You're quite the arsenal today, aren't you? You're acting more like you're wanted dead or alive than like a free man. Notice I said free, not innocent." "Free how long?" Reich said through his teeth. "I never talked about innocence either. But free how long?"
"Forever."
"I had a perfect case against you. Every detail right. I checked that when I peeped you with Barbara just now. I had every detail except one. And that one flaw blew my case out in a deep space. You're a free man, Reich. We've closed your file."
Reich stared.
"Close the file?" "Yep. No solution. I'm licked. You can disarm, Reich. Go about your business. No one's going to bother you." "You're a liar. This is one of your peeper tricks. You..."
"No. I'll lay it out for you. I know all about you.
how much you bribed Gus Tate, what you promised Jerry Church, where you located that sardine game, what you did with Wilson Jordan's rhodopsin caps, how you emptied those cartridges for an alibi, then turned them lethal again with a drop of water. So far, a perfect chain of evidence, method and opportunity. But motive was the flaw. The courts demand objective motive, and I can't produce it. That sets you free.
You're a liar.
Of course, I could throw this breaking and entering with deadly intent at you, but it's too small a charge. Like shooting a pop gun after you misfire with a cannon. You could probably beat it, too. My only witnesses would be a peeper and a sick girl.
I, you liar,
Reich growled.
You hypocrite! You lying peeper! Am I supposed to believe you? Am I supposed to listen to the rest of it? You had nothing, pal, nothing. I licked you on every point. That's why you're booby-trapping me. That's why you...
Reich broke off abruptly and beat his forehead.
And this is probably the biggest booby-trap of all, and I fell into it. What a damn fool I am. What a...
Shut up, Pyle snapped. When you rave like that, I can't peep you. Now what's all this about booby-traps? Think it through. Reich uttered a ragged laugh.
As if you don't know. My stateroom on the liner, my gaff safe, my jumper.
For almost a minute, Pyle focused on Reich, peeping, absorbing, digesting. Then his face began to pale, and his respiration quickened.
My God, he exclaimed. My God!
He leaped to his feet and began pacing distractedly.
That's it. That explains it. And old man Mose was right. Passion motive. And we thought he was kittenish. And Barbara's Siamese twin image. And De Courtney's guilt. No wonder Reich couldn't kill us at Chukas. But the murder isn't important anymore. It goes deeper, far deeper. And it's dangerous, more than I ever dreamed.
He stopped, turned, and looked at Reich with blazing eyes.
If I could kill you, he cried, I'd twist your head off with my hands.
I'd tear you apart and hang you on a galactic gallows. And the universe would bless me. Do you know how dangerous you are? Does a plague know its pearl? Is death conscious?
Reich goggled at Pyle in bewilderment. The prefect shook his head impatiently.
Why ask you? He muttered. You don't know what I'm talking about. You'll never know.
He went to a sideboard, selected two brandy ampules, and popped them into Reich's mouth. Reich attempted to spit them out. Pyle held his jaws shut.
Swallow them, he said crisply. I want you to pull yourself together and listen to me.
Do you want butylin? Thyric acid? Can you compose yourself without drugs? Reich choked on the brandy and sputtered angrily. Pyle shook him silent.
Get this straight, Pyle said. I'm going to show you half the pattern. Try to understand it. The case against you is closed. It's closed because of those booby traps. If I'd known about them, I'd never have started the case. I'd have broken my conditioning and killed you. Try to understand this, Reich.
Reich stopped, spluttering.
I couldn't find a motive for your murder. That's the flaw. When you offered murder to De Courtney, he accepted. He sent WWHG in answer. That's acceptance. You had no reason to murder him. You had every objective reason to keep him alive.
Reich went white. His head began to wobble crazily.
No, no! WWHG offer. Refused. Refusal. Refusal.
Acceptance. No! The bastard refused. He accepted. When I learned that De Courtney accepted your offer, I was finished. I knew I couldn't bring a case to court. But I haven't been trying to booby-trap you. I did not gaff your stateroom lock. I did not plant those detonation bulbs. I'm not the man who's trying to murder you. That man is trying to kill you because he knows you're safe from me. He knows you're safe from demolition. He's always known what I've just discovered, that you're the deadly enemy of our entire future. Reich tried to speak. He struggled up out of the sofa, gesticulating feebly. Finally he said,
"Who is it? Who? Who?"
"He's your ancient enemy, Reich, a man you'll never escape. You'll never be able to run from him, hide from him. And I pray to God you'll never be able to save yourself from him."
"Who is it, Pao? Who is it?"
"The man with no face."
Reich emitted a guttural cry of pain. Then he turned and staggered out of the house. Chapter 15.
Tension, apprehension, and dissension have begun. Tension, apprehension, and dissension have begun. Tension, apprehension, and dissension have begun.
"Shut up!"
Reich cried. 8, sir, 7, sir, 6, sir, 5, "For God's sake, shut up!" 4, sir, 3, sir, 2, sir, 1.
"You've got to think. Why don't you think? What's happening to you? Why don't you think?"
"Tension, apprehension."
"He was lying. You know he was lying. You were right the first time. A giant booby trap. WWHG. Refusal. Refusal. But why did he lie? How is that going to help him?"
"Dissensions have begun."
"The man with no face." "Breen could have told him. Goss Tate could have told him. Think."
"Tension."
"There is no man with no face. It's just a dream, a nightmare."
"Apprehension."
"But the booby traps. What about the booby traps? He had me cold in his house. Why didn't he pull the switch? Telling me I'm free. What's he up to? Think."
"Dissension."
A hand touched his shoulder. "Mr. Reich?"
"What?"
"Mr. Reich?"
"What? Who's that?"
Reich's eyes focused. He became aware that it was raining heavily. He was lying on his side, knees drawn up, arms folded, his cheek buried in mud. He was drenched, shivering with cold. He was in the esplanade of Bomb Inlet. Around him were sighing, sodden trees. A figure was bending over him.
"Who are you?"
"Galen Sherville, Mr. Reich."
"What?"
"Galen Sherville, sir, from Maria Beaumont's party. Can I do you that favor, Mr. Reich?"
"Don't peep me,"
Reich cried. "I'm not, Mr. Reich. We don't usually..."
Young Cherville caught himself. "I didn't know you knew I was a peeper. You'd better get up, sir." He took Reich's arm and pulled. Reich groaned and yanked his arm free. Young Cherville took him under the shoulders and raised him, staring at Reich's frightful appearance.
"Were you mugged, Mr. Reich?"
"What?"
"No, no." "Accident, sir?"
"No, I..." "Oh, for God's sake," Reich burst out. "Get the hell away from me."
"Certainly, sir. I thought you needed help, and I owe you a favor, but..."
"Wait,"
Reich interrupted.
"Come back."
He grasped the bole of a tree and leaned against it, panting hoarsely. Finally, he thrust himself erect and stared at Cherville with bloodshot eyes.
"You mean that about the favor?"
"Of course, Mr. Reich.
No questions asked. No tales told."
"Certainly not, Mr. Reich."
"My problem's murder, Cherville. I want to find out who's trying to kill me. Will you do me that favor? Will you peep someone for me?"
"I should imagine the police would be able to..."
"The police!"
Reich laughed hysterically, then clutched himself in agony as the broken rib caught.
I want you to peep a cop for me, Chervo. A big cop, the commissioner of cops. Do you understand?
He let go the tree and lurched Chervo.
I want to visit my friend the commissioner and ask him a few questions. I want you to be there to tell me the truth. Will you come to Crab's office and peep him for me? Will you just do it and forget about it, will you?
Yes, Mr. Reich, I will.
What? An honest peeper? How about that? Come on, let's jet.
Reich stumbled out of the esplanade with a horrible gait. Chervil followed, overwhelmed by the fury in the man that drove him through injury, through fever, through agony to police headquarters. There Reich bulled and roared past clerks and guards until the mud-streaked, blood-smeared figure burst into Commissioner Crabb's elaborate ebony and silver office.
"My God, Reich!"
Crabb was aghast.
"It is you, isn't it, Ben Reich?"
"Sit down, Chervo,"
Reich said. He turned to Crabb.
"It's me. Get a full perspective. I'm half a corpse, Crabb. The red stuff's blood, the rest is slime. I've had a great day, a glorious day. And I want to know where the hell the police have been. Where's your God Almighty Prefect Powell? Where's your half a corpse? What are you telling me, Ben? I'm telling you I was almost murdered 3 times today. This boy,"
Reich pointed to Chervo,
"this boy just found me in the inlet esplanade, more dead than alive. Look at me, for Christ's sake, look at me." "Murdered?"
Crabb thumped his desk emphatically.
"Of course. That Powell is a fool. I should never have listened to him. The man who killed the Courtney is trying to kill you."
Behind his back, Reich motioned savagely to Chervil.
"I told Powell you were innocent. He wouldn't listen to me,"
Crabb said.
"Even when that infernal adding machine in the district attorney's office told him you were innocent, he wouldn't listen."
"The machine said I was innocent."
"Of course it did. There's no case against you. There never was a case against you.
And by the sacred Bill of Rights, you'll have the protection from the murderer that any honest, law-abiding citizen deserves. I'll see to that at once." Crabb strode to the door. "And I think this is all I'll need to settle Mr. Powell's hash for good. Now, don't go, Ben.
I want to talk to you about your support for the solar senatorship."
The door opened and slammed. Reich reeled and fought his way back to the world. He looked at 3 Chervils.
"Well?"
he muttered.
"Well?"
"He was telling the truth, Mr. Reich."
"About me? About Powell?"
"Well," Chervil paused judiciously, weighing the truth.
"Jet, you bastard!"
Reich groaned.
"How long do you think I can keep my fusees from blowing?"
"He's telling the truth about you," Chervil said quickly. "The prosecution computer has declined to authorize any action against you for the de Courtney murder. Mr. Powell has been forced to abandon the case and, well, his career is very much in jeopardy."
"Is that true?"
Reich staggered to the boy and seized his shoulders.
"Is that true, Chervil? I've been cleared? I can go about my business. No one's going to bother me."
"You've been dropped, Mr. Reich. You can go about your business. No one's going to bother you." Reich burst into a roar of triumphant laughter. The pain of his bruised and broken body made him groan as he laughed, and his eyes smarted with tears. He pulled himself up, brushed past Chervil, and left the commissioner's office. He was more a Neanderthal vestige as he paraded down headquarters corridors streaked with blood and mud, laughing and groaning, bearing himself with limping arrogance. He needed a stag's carcass on his shoulders or a cave bear borne in triumph behind him to complete the picture.
"I'll complete the picture with Powell's head," he told himself, "stuffed and mounted on my wall. I'll complete the picture with the de Courtney cartel stuffed into my pockets. By God, give me time, I'll complete a picture with a galaxy inside the frame."
He passed through the steel portals of headquarters and stood for a moment on the steps, gazing at the rain-swept street, at the amusement centre across the square, block after block blazing under a single, mutual, transparent dome, at the open shops lining the upper footways, all bustle and brilliance as the city's night shopping began, the towering office buildings in the background, great 200-storey cubes, the lace tracery of skyways linking them together, the twinkling running lights of jumpers bobbing up and down like a plague of crimson-eyed grasshoppers in a field. "And I'll own you!" he shouted, raising his arms to engulf the universe. "I'll own you all, bodies, passions, and souls!" Then his eye caught the tall, ominous, familiar figure crossing the square, watching him covertly over its shoulder, a figure of black shadows sparkling with raindrop jewels, looking, looming, silent, horrible. A man with no face. There was a strangled cry. The fuses blew. Like a blighted tree, Reich fell to the ground. At 9:01, 10 of the 15 members of the Esper Guild Council assembled in President Tissong's office. Emergency business required their attention. At 9:01, the meeting was adjourned with the business completed. Within those 120 Esper seconds, the following took place. A gavel pounding, a clock face, hour hand at 9, minute hand at 59. Second hand at 60. Emergency meeting to examine a request for mass cathesis, with Lincoln Powell as the human canal for the capitalized energy. Consternation. Tissong, you can't be serious, Powell. How can you make such a request? What can possibly require such an extraordinary and dangerous measure? Powell, an astonishing development in the de Courtney case, which I would like you all to examine. Examination. Powell, you all know that Reich is our most dangerous enemy. He is supporting the anti-Esper smear campaign. Unless that is blocked, we may suffer the usual history of minority groups. Atkins, true enough. Powell, he is also supporting the League of Esper Patriots. Unless that organization is blocked, we may be plunged into a civil war and be lost forever in a morass of internal chaos. Franian, that's true too. Powell, but there is an additional development which you have all examined. Reich is about to become a galactic focal point, a crucial link between the positive past and the probable future. He is on the verge of a powerful reorganization at this moment. Time is of the essence. If Reich can readjust and reorient before I can reach him, he will become immune to our reality, invulnerable to our attack, and the deadly enemy of galactic reason and reality. Alarm. Atkins, surely you're exaggerating, Powell. Powell, am I? Inspect the picture with me. Look at Reich's position in time and space. Will not his beliefs become the world's belief? Will not his reality become the world's reality? Is he not, in his critical position of power, energy, and intellect, a sure road to utter destruction? Conviction. Tissong, that's true. Nevertheless, I'm reluctant to authorize the mass cathesis measure. You will recall that the MCM has invariably destroyed the human energy canal in past attempts. You are too valuable to be destroyed, Powell. Powell, I must be permitted to run the risk. Reich is one of the rare universe shakers. A child as yet, but about to mature. And all reality, espers, normals, life, the earth, the solar system, the universe itself, all reality hangs precariously on his awakening. He cannot be permitted to awake to the wrong reality. I call the question. Franion, you're asking us to vote your death. Powell, it's my death against the eventual death of everything we know. I call the question. Atkins, let Reich awaken as he will. We have the time and the warning to attack him at another crossroad. Powell, question. I call the question. Request granted. Meeting adjourned. Clock face. Hour hand at 9, minute hand at 01, second hand at demolition. Powell arrived home an hour later. He had made his will, paid his bills, signed his papers, arranged everything. There had been dismay at the guild. There was dismay when he came home. Mary Noyes read what he'd done the instant he entered.
Link.
No fuss. It's got to be done.
But
there's a chance it won't kill me. Oh, one reminder. Lab wants a brain autopsy as soon as I'm dead. If I die. I've signed all the papers, but I wish you'd help in case there's trouble. They'd like to have the body before rigor. If they can't get the corpse, they'll settle for the head. See to it, will you?
Link.
Sorry. Now you better pack and take the baby up to Kingston Hospital. She won't be safe here.
She isn't a baby anymore. She...
Mary turned and ran upstairs, trailing the familiar sensory impact. Snow, mint, tulips, taffeta. And now mixed with terror and tears. Powell sighed, then smiled as a highly poised teenager appeared at the head of the stairs and came down with grand insouciance. She was wearing a dress and an expression of rehearsed surprise. She paused halfway down to let him take in the dress and the manner.
Why, Mr. Powell, is it not?
It is. Good morning, Barbara.
And what brings you to our little domain this morning?
She came down the rest of the stairs with her fingertips brushing the banister and tripped on the bottom step.
Oh, Pip, she squawked.
Powell caught her. Pop. He said. Bim.
Damn.
She looked up at him.
You stand right here. I'm going up and down those stairs again, and I bet I do it perfect.
I bet you don't. She turned, trotted up, and posed again at the top step.
Dear Mr. Powell, what a scatterbrain you must think me.
She began the grand descent.
You must re-evaluate your opinion of me. I am no longer the mere child I was yesterday. I am ages and ages older. You must regard me as an adult from now on.
She negotiated the bottom step and regarded him intently.
Re-evaluate, is that right?
Revaluate is sometimes preferred, my dear.
I thought it had an extra sound.
Suddenly she laughed, pushed him into a chair, and plumped down on his lap. Powell groaned.
Gently, Barbara. Your age is older and pounds heavier.
Listen, she said. Whatever made me think you was...
Were
my father?
What's the matter with me as your father?
Let's be frank, real frank.
Sure.
Do you feel like a father towards me? Because I don't feel like a daughter towards you.
Oh, how do you feel?
I asked first, so you go first.
My feelings towards you are those of a loving and dutiful son.
No, be serious.
I have resolved to be a trustworthy son to all women until Vulcan assumes its rightful place in the Committee of Planets.
She flushed angrily and got up from his lap.
I wanted you to be serious, because I need advice, but you...
I'm sorry, Barbara. What is it?
She knelt alongside him and took his hand.
I'm all mixed up about you.
How?
She looked into his eyes with the alarming directness of the young.
You know.
After a pause, he nodded.
Me too.
And you're all mixed up about me, too, I know.
Yes, Barbara, that's true, I am.
Is it wrong?
Pal heaved up from the chair and began pacing unhappily. No, Barbara, it isn't wrong. It's mistimed.
I want you to tell me about it.
Tell you? Yes, I suppose I'd better. I'll put it this way, Barbara. The two of us are four people. There's two of you and two of me.
Why?
You've been sick, dear. So we had to turn you into a baby and let you grow up again. That's why you're two people. The grown-up Barbara inside and the baby outside.
And you?
I'm two grown-up people. One of them is me, Powell. The other is a member of the Governing Council of the Esper Guild.
What's that?
It doesn't need explaining. It's the part of me that's got me mixed up. God knows, maybe it's the baby part, I don't know. She considered earnestly, then said slowly,
When I don't feel like a daughter to you, which me feels like that?
I don't know, Barbara.
You do know. Why won't you say?
She came to him and put her arms around his neck, a grown-up woman with the manner of a child.
If it isn't wrong, why won't you say? If I love you.
Who said anything about love?
It's what we're talking about, isn't it? Isn't it? I love you and you love me. Isn't that it?
All right, Powell thought desperately. Here it is. What are you going to do? Admit the truth? Yes. From the stairs. Mary was descending with a traveling case in her hand.
Admit the truth. She isn't a peeper. Forget that. She's a woman and she's in love with you. You're in love with her. Please, Link, give yourselves a chance.
A chance or what? An affair if I get out of this Reich mess alive. That's all it could be. You know the guild won't let us marry normals.
She'll settle for that. She'll be grateful to settle for that. Ask me. I know.
And if I don't come out alive, she'll have nothing. Nothing but half a memory of half a love. No, Barbara, he said. That isn't it all.
It is, she insisted. It is.
No. The baby part of you's talking. The baby thinks she's in love with me. The woman is not.
She'll grow up into the woman.
And she'll forget all about me.
You'll make her remember.
Why should I, Barbara?
Because you feel that way about me, too. I know you do.
Powell laughed. Baby, baby, baby. What makes you think I'm in love with you that way?
I'm not. I've never been. You are.
Open your eyes, Barbara. Look at me. Look at Mary. You're ages older, aren't you? Can't you understand? Do I have to explain the obvious?
For God's sake, Link. Sorry, Mary. Gotta use you. I'm getting ready to say goodbye, maybe for good. Do I have to endure this? Isn't it bad enough for me already?
Shh, gently, dear. Barbara stared at Mary, then at Powell. She shook her head slowly.
You're lying.
Am I? Look at me. He put his hands on her shoulders and looked into her face. Dishonest Abe came to his assistance. His expression was kind, tolerant, amused, patronizing. Look at me, Barbara.
No, she cried. Your face is lying. It's hateful.
She burst into tears and sobbed. Oh, go away.
Why don't you go away?
We are going away, Barbara, Mary said. She came forward, took the girl's arm, and led her to the door. There's a jumper waiting, Mary. There's me waiting, Link, for you always. And the Shervilles and Atkins and Jordans, etc., etc., etc.
I know, I know.
I love you all. Kisses. Kisses. Blessings. Image of four-leaf clover, rabbit's feet, horseshoes. Bawdy response of Powell emerging from slope covered with diamonds. Faint laughter. Farewell. He stood in the doorway whistling a crooked, plaintive tune, watching the jumper disappear into the steel-blue sky boring north towards Kingston Hospital. He was exhausted. a little proud of himself for having made the sacrifice, intensely ashamed of himself for feeling proud, clearly a melancholic. Should he take a grain of potassium niacate and kick himself up into the manic curve? What the hell was the use? Look at that great foul city of 17.5 million souls, and not one soul for him. Look at... The first impulse came. A thin trickle of latent energy. He felt it distinctly and glanced at his watch. 10:20. So soon. So quickly. Good. He'd better get ready. He turned into the house and darted up the stairs to his dressing room. The impulses came pattering, like the preliminary raindrops before a storm. His psyche began to throb and vibrate as he reached out and absorbed those tiny streams of latent energy. He changed his clothes, dressed for all weather, and what? The pattering had become a drizzle, washing over him, filling his consciousness with ague, with grinding emotional flashes, with, yes, nutrient capsules. Hold on to that. Nutrient. 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 He tumbled down the stairs into the kitchen, found the plastic bulb, cracked it, and swallowed a dozen capsules. The energy came in torrents now. From each esper in the city, a trickle of latent power that merged and merged into a stream, a river, a swirling sea of mass cathesis, directed towards Powell, tuned to Powell. He opened all blocks and absorbed it all. His nervous system super-hydrodyned and screamed, and a turbine in his mind whirled faster and faster with a mounting intolerable whine. He was out of the house, wandering through the streets, blind, deaf, senseless, emerged in that boiling mass of latent energy, like a ship with sails caught in the nexus of a typhoon, fighting to convert a whirlpool of wind into the motive power that would lead to safety. So Powell fought to absorb that fearful torrent, to capitalize that latent energy, to cathectize and direct it towards the demolition of Reich before it was too late. Too late, too late, too late, too late.
That is the end of this side.